save a star.
Sorry about the wait. Between someone starting a new job, someone moving about 100 miles away, and one bloke getting a haircut, we have been very busy. But do not fear, Save the Stub is back. So welcome. Hello again to my two compadres, Rory McNair and William Foster. Hi, lads.
Hello, hello.
Hi, I'm excited. It's back in my life.
Didn't ask. The film we are looking at this week is The Dig, an archaeological drama from the 30s on Netflix, which sounds as thrilling as you might expect.
I'd say normally, you know, we hope you guys have seen this so you can follow along, but I really hope you haven't seen this so you don't have to follow along.
It's a high eight. before that, we've got some film news. We've got some question. So yeah, let's jump straight in.
Okay, this week on the news, I was trawling the internet, which is a bit unusual because most weeks I don't bother. But we've got a new Star Wars series coming out, something that I found called Star Wars Visions. It's in its final stages of production and it's going to be launching on the 22nd of September on Disney Plus. So the format is 9 episodes. Well, it's all animated, so similar to Clone Wars, I suppose, if people like that series. But every single episode is produced by a different anime director and their respective like production teams, I suppose, in Japan. And they've specifically said it's Star Wars, but in a Japanese view. I thought this was like really interesting concepts. The other thing is that we don't know anything about the episodes, but we do know one of them is going to be set pre-episode one, so pre-Phantom Menace. And there's going to be another one that's going to be post The Rise of Skywalker, which is episode 9, so like the final.
Wait, how far is this going to stretch if it's only 9 episodes, but it's somehow... Yeah.
This is the thing. So they got 9 chronological films plus the ones in between.
Films? I thought this was going to be like a TV series.
It is a TV series.
Yeah, so it is a TV series, but it's interlinked with the films, obviously, because it's all the same universe.
I see.
So it spans the whole kind of 9 episodes of the film
series. Oh, I see. We're getting our vocabulary mixed up.
Yeah. But I just thought it was so strange that this is... It's very much anime. I've seen some screenshots and it's very much like anime style and design.
Did you guys buy into the animated Star Wars stuff? Because like the people I know who really liked it, really, really like it.
And it's a bit weird.
And I've just never watched it.
It just looks average. I watched the first episode of The Bad Batch, the one that came out earlier this year. And that was legitimately awful. So I honestly, it's like it is for kids. I don't get it. Is the other one for kids?
I don't know. I was going to say I enjoyed it, but I actually fell asleep when I watched it. So maybe I didn't enjoy it as much as I remember.
Is this new one for adults or is it for children?
Yeah, so it's very much anime. Oh, actually, well, yeah, I suppose that could still be for kids.
Still, kids are allowed to watch cartoons, Will.
Well, it's on Disney Plus, isn't it? I can't imagine it's going to be anything that's too, like...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I just went to look at the IMDb page. My God, there's a lot of Star Wars content coming out at the moment.
Yeah.
The Acolyte, Star Wars A Droid Story, Dissidents, A Star Wars Story, Star Wars Lando, Star Wars Rangers of the New Republic, Rogue Squadron, Ahsoka, whatever that means, Andor, Kenobi, Untitled Star Wars Exegol Project, Obi-Wan Kenobi, and another Star Wars film, like a normal one.
Wasn't Kenobi meant to come out ages ago?
Yeah, I think it has come out. Shit, it's already got a review. But that is mad. How is there that much stuff going on?
I mean, you can just tell that when The Mandalorian came out, they were like, damn, we underestimated how much you guys were going to buy back into all this.
It's mad. I mean, it probably makes a silly amount of money as well.
Like, this is what happens, isn't it, I suppose? I think that's partly why we included it in the news this week as well. Like, we've talked about kind of what's happened to Marvel and like franchises, where we think they're going. But I think... Again, this just confirms that a lot of the filmmaking at the moment is kind of like about money and how much like production teams can make off simple franchises.
If they made a cool like adult one in a Game of Thrones style, I'd actually really vibe with it because it is a good universe. Like, I don't think you can fault that. Just everything I've seen so far has just been for children.
I also feel like when you've got a universe that's quite cool, it really bugs me when you try and link everything together.
In it, yeah.
Like, slightly link it. I understand, like, things looking a bit the same, but when it ends up just copying the exact same thing and the format feels the same, like...
It's like lazy prequels. It's like Prometheus and all those ones where it's like, well, we have to do an origin story for the sake of doing an origin. You just do something different. You can just use the name and it'll sell. You don't need to have Jango Fett in every episode or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, like that Ahsoka one that you talked about, Harry. Like, Ahsoka is like just another Jedi Knight.
She's quite a big character, yeah.
But like we've had like Kenobi, which presumably is a spin-off about Obi-Wan Kenobi as a Jedi. And Ahsoka's got one that's presumably basically the same thing.
Yeah, but it's looking at like the episode title's like a droid story. I'm going to really watch a story about a fucking robot. Or Lando, who was like fundamentally quite a boring character because he didn't actually do anything. He wasn't very good with guns. Or, you know, and how does Obi-Wan get two? Pick one.
I don't know. So yeah, I thought it was an interesting concept anyway. And to be fair, like every single episode is directed by like completely different person, which I think is quite cool as well.
Yeah, it's the same thing they did for that's what they do for Mandalorian, I think, isn't it? Yeah, quite a lot of different directors, like Taika Waititi did one, I remember.
Well, I'll probably watch it to be fair, but I'm not that into anime. Like Harry, you kind of like anime, don't you?
Sorry, did you portray me as an anime like otaku?
I mean, as the weeb of the group.
Yeah, I did watch another one the other week actually, but that's a very famous film that we might talk about in the future. I don't know. I mean, it looks like knockoff anime. Do you know what I mean? It looks...
It's all Japanese production. It's all like...
Yeah, but it looks cheap. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's just like a fundamental... I'm not saying that's a bad thing because you can make things that look cheap but are sick. But I think at the moment it looks very basic. I'll have to see some... I mean, the image I'm looking at now looks horrendous. But yeah, I'll watch the first episode, see where it goes. If they get it right, maybe I'll watch another one. I very much doubt it, though. There is one guy dressed as a samurai with a lightsaber. And I'm thinking, nah, this ain't it, Chief.
Interesting. All right, we'll move on from that then. So recently we had Cannes Film Festival. Oh, my God.
You got it. Trust yourself. Yeah,
there we go. Which is it a big event in the film calendar?
Yeah, but not for people who don't, like, care. It's not like the Oscars. It's like... let's do a 15-minute round of applause standing up for a film, which must be really awkward for everyone involved. And that's what they did for The French Dispatch. They stood there for even longer so they could break the record for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So it's just them standing there clapping for like
also,
six
I feel
people.
Like they're normally slightly edgier than you get with Hollywood award ceremonies. Like, they're willing to kind of give stuff a chance that is not going to perform that well with like big audiences.
Yeah, theoretically it's for the film enthusiast rather than the film sort of just like a box office fan. So in that respect, it's also extraordinarily subjective because some of these films will just be people think they are bad or good because of certain things, even though they may not actually be bad or good.
Yeah. Is it fair to say it's a bit more respected in the film community itself, like people that we even live films, like all of us?
Maybe, but then I feel like people might think the judges are idiots sometimes. The judges are like famous actors and actresses, quite a lot of them. Like, I know Maggie Gyllenhaal is one of the panel this year. So, you know, just like well-known people in the community.
Well, a film called Titane won the Palme d'Or this year. And for anyone that doesn't know, like myself, until a week ago, that's the big prize, basically, isn't it? It's like a film that wins.
Yeah.
It is
the most recognition.
I don't know what previous Palme d'Or winners are, actually. I wonder if there are any like that we've actually seen.
I'm sure. Well, there will be some.
It's a French film, first off, isn't it? Titane, I think.
It is, and is it the first time a female director's won the Palme d'Or? Or second time? I think it's pretty rare.
Second time.
Until this point. Second time.
Does anyone know anything about the film?
Someone has sex with a car.
Yeah, it's a bit of a rogue one, I think. The general premise, I think, is that the premise is that it's like a girl who gets in a car crash when she's like a child and like gets serious brain damage and then gets like titanium put in her brain or in her head to like keep her alive. And that leads to her being a bit of a messed up person. And she becomes a bit of a serial killer, I think.
Oh, this is directed by the same person who did Raw. Do you remember hearing about Raw? As in R-A-W. It's a cannibal film that came out a couple of years ago that, you know, people like Lad Bible were like, people are vomiting in the cinema watching the first scene from this film. Even though apparently that wasn't at all the point and that it was actually like quite a good film. So that's, I assume, how she got like her big break. So she likes weird topics. You know, she's done cannibalism in a school, I think it is, where you like eat flesh. And now she's doing people having sex with cars.
Yeah. I mean, just from internet reviews, it looks like a bit mixed. For example, 6.5 IMDb, but then it's like 96% on Rotten Tomatoes.
So. The problem with IMDb is that I think people do genuinely review stuff. Review something on IMDb. People will just like put random stuff on that website.
Yeah.
Based off like...
When you look at them, like, it's a lot of like ones just from people that absolutely hate the film. And then like the 2, 3, 4, like it's just nothing. And then
IMDb.
I do think the film has come out. I think it came out maybe last week in France, but I don't know if it's out internationally.
Well,
but you know, if you want to broaden your film horizons, watch a film like that.
Yeah. For reference, the last winner for the Palme d'Or was Parasite. So, you know, famous things do win it. Oh, well, rarely though. It wouldn't be a lot of things you'd see typically. I'm trying to look back for another really big. Pulp Fiction was the next closest one, probably in 94.
Taxi Driver was back in, I mean, that was old, I guess, but...
Was it? I haven't even got... Yeah, Apocalypse Now, Taxi Driver. But you've got to go back a while to find stuff that people would have definitely seen.
These are all very, like, kind of gritty, darker side of films.
Yeah, or so, like, interpretive, like The Tree of Life, which people semi-love, semi-hate.
Hmm.
It's just like... Brad Pitt flying around a tree for quite a lot of it. But yeah, strange one.
Well, Titane is described as body horror thriller. So if that sounds like a bit of you, then maybe
that
check
sounds
it
like
out.
A bit of you, you need to get checked out.
Yeah. Next on my list was our good friend, not really. I don't know why I said that, but Spike Lee. He was at Camden Film Festival this year.
Good friend.
What happened to him?
So this is directly linked to what we were just talking about, but it's kind of early on, I think, in the award presentations, the woman kind of introducing them all was like, hey, Spike Lee, tell us what award is coming up next. And he was like, oh, well, the Palme d'Or's coming up next and Titane has won it. And they were like, no, we asked what award's coming up, not who's won the award. So then it was like 20 minutes later that they actually like were supposed to announce it. So they kind of all just ignored it. And then 20 minutes later, he was like, yeah, Titane won.
It did actually win. Well, that's always good for an award show, telling people who won before.
Happens quite a lot, doesn't it? Like, who was? Don't tell them in advance.
Was it like Miss Universe or Miss World that someone...
Steve Harvey got that wrong. And then they got La La Land and Moonlight wrong as well, didn't they? Was that the other one? They said the wrong one for that.
Oh, God.
I mean, that's a few.
For people that are like professional... presenters, or at least in showbiz, you would expect a bit better, really. All right, anyway, let's move on to some new film releases, because we've been away for a while. We've got quite a few, so I'm just going to rattle through some and we can just quickly discuss if we want to see them or not. First one, we talked about it before, Space Jam 2. It's already out in UK cinemas. We've already been able to see it if we wanted. So.
And we did want to.
At least
I did.
Have you seen it?
What better way to celebrate cinema coming back than going and watching LeBron step into the shoes of Michael Jordan on the big screen?
Dunk on some Looney
Tunes. Awful looking.
I have to say, he's a better actor than Michael Jordan is. Although, every time he speaks, he's just like giving a life lesson as though he's like a basketball coach, which is a bit strange. But I feel like as a kid, it's a fun kids film. It goes on quite a long time, but generally I'd give it a positive review.
Interesting. I don't think I'll watch it in cinemas, but eventually when it's like free or on some kind of streaming service, I'd probably give it a watch. But
the one thing I found really weird about the film was that LeBron obviously plays himself, but but then he's got an entire fictionalized family. So, like,
they don't use his real one.
No, so all of his family are actors. Like, his wife is played by a really famous actress.
But he's got bare kids and what? Well, he's only got one wife, but bare kids and a wife.
I mean,
I gotta look this up. Who's his wife? I bet it'll be like Tanny.
There's like an equivalent of Bronny, his oldest son, in the film, but he's called like Darius, and he's not supposed to be Bronny. And then his younger son, like, the plot of the film is that his younger son gets like kidnapped, and it's not his real son. And there's like this scene. There's a scene in the film where he's like, "Oh, it's really meaningful to me, so I write my family's name on my shoes before I play a game." But he's writing fake names of people who aren't in LeBron James's family. So it's just like, this feels kind
of
messed
That's
up.
That's a bit of a weird one. The mum is in, like, The Walking Dead and stuff.
She's in Handmaid's Tale as well.
Yeah, what a weird... Why have they done that?
Yeah, it's strange.
Okay, well, so we've got this Space Jam film. Another film that's just come out is Black Widow. And there's a bit of an interesting story with this one, isn't there?
Well, I think what's kind of blowing people out of the water is that Space Jam is beating Black Widow in the box office. And I've heard some pretty awful things about Black Widow. Maybe not awful, maybe that's a bit of a stretch, but it's not quite what it cracked up to be. What do you think, Harry?
Someone, Ed Cook, who is a previous guest on this show, told me that there's a really horribly handled bit about, like, feminism that they just like clunk through, and it's like supposed to be a joke but not really a topic you joke about. I honestly think if this was any other franchise or just like a standalone film, it would probably get shot down, but because it's Marvel, it's sort of like, nah, you're right, leave them to it. Seems a bit weird to me, but I haven't read anything about it. It just looks like the most bang average stopgap, this character's already dead but we need to continue the franchise for no reason sort of thing. What's the average score? 6.9. Like, that's still quite high for a dross film. Do you know what I mean?
Interesting. I wonder what Space Jam is.
But, you know, when it comes to Marvel, as soon as the next one, like, if this one comes out and doesn't do that well, there's plenty more in the pipeline that they're just going to put in front of you and you're going to have to deal with. So, you know, we move on. Although,
ironically, like Hydra, in that you can cut one head off and another one will appear, just like in Captain America. How great
right.
is that?
Right, onto some films that haven't actually come out yet. So we've got Suicide Squad 2. What do we think? Have we watched the trailer for this?
We did watch the trailer. I can't remember what you lot thought. I thought it looked fun.
I don't think I liked it.
It looks very, you know, over the top, but that's what you expect of James Gunn, right?
Yeah.
I think it's probably worth a watch. Again, it's probably a pretty fun film.
And I was looking at things for the news earlier today. I think I saw an article about how someone had said that it's actually really violent, which was a bit of a surprise.
Oh, no, I think we knew it would be violent, didn't we? Wasn't the first one, like, quite violent? I can't remember anymore. Yeah, I think they're both, like, 15.
Wait, talking about Suicide Squad. Why wouldn't it be violent?
Yeah.
I don't know. Again, I haven't seen the first one.
Do you mean like gory violent?
I guess so. I don't know. It was just a bit of a shock.
Yeah, I feel like that'd be a good thing for it to be, because the first one was tame, even by, like, you know, you portray all these people as like uber criminals and then they don't do anything other than like shoot people or him with like a baseball bat. And they're all, you know, CGI'd rubbish. So you make the blood blue and then suddenly you can pass it as a 12.
I'm just looking forward to the Shark Man thing. See whatever he does in the film.
I think it'll be good. I don't think it'll be good. I mean, it's got 4-star reviews that they're putting on the poster, which worries me. But I think it'll be fun.
You hate reviews on the poster, don't you?
If you put a 4-star review on the poster, it means your film has not done that well. Name me a single film that's really good that's got 4 stars all over the poster. They just don't exist, because you wouldn't put it on there unless you needed to.
How many stars would you put on a poster? Just you.
5. You only ever see ads for things when they mention the stars, it's always 5. Like Tenet. Put exclusively 5-star reviews on the front, because if you put a 4, people will be like, well, it's not 5 out of 5.
Is that the best that you can do?
That's literally what I think when I look at these films. If you find me a film with 4 stars on the front, I guarantee you it's like a bad film.
Send it in to Saber Stubbs. You know what to do.
Stubbs.
Do you even belong to this?
Stub.
Is it singular? Singular stub.
Yeah. Wait. Well, are you taking the piss?
This whole time you don't know the name of our podcast.
You're honestly taking the piss?
I think I just say stubs like all the time. That's my
bad. What do you mean you say that all the time? Just stop saying it.
All right. I've been told.
How have you not heard the jingle?
That's true, yeah. That should be ingrained in my mind. It's definitely singular.
It really should. You don't listen to that once a day. I mean, what are you doing with your life?
It's my ringtone. What are you talking about?
There are no good films with 4 stars in the front. I've just checked.
All of the good films ever.
Yeah.
Right. Next film. Newly coming out soon. James Bond.
Ooh.
Which was actually supposed to be out ages ago.
Yeah. Film ran.
It's weird how I saw the ad for it, the trailer for it in the cinema. And it's just weird how it's been over a year since I saw the trailer for the first time. And I was like, oh, I wonder what actually happens in the film. And it's a year and a half later. And I'm like, oh, I wonder what actually happens in the film.
I feel like everyone's going to see this, aren't they?
It's a guaranteed box office, and it's Daniel Craig's last. I will watch it again, but the only film I've ever fallen asleep in the cinema was one of the James Bonds recently.
Really? Which one?
I fell asleep during Spectre.
I haven't. Yeah. I've watched Spectre twice, and both times I haven't been paying attention.
I think a plane was going through a ski lodge, and I was asleep. I was just so bored.
I really liked Daniel Craig as James Bond, but again, for some reason, Spectre I wasn't that excited about it. And then when it did come out, I watched it kind of half-assed, and then I watched it again and just stopped paying attention.
Yeah, I don't think I could tell anyone what Spectre was about. Similar to Rory.
Yeah, neither. Do you know? Neither. I mean, they've done a lot to change it though. Phoebe Waller-Bridge is on the scripting side of things to bring it up to date and things like this. I just think let it die for a little bit. Do you know what I mean?
Still no closer to finding out who the next 007 is either, are we?
I feel like that's the thing. I think, if anything, leave it to die or kind of now is a good time for a bit of a reinvigoration of it.
Do you think? I think you've just got to let it lie.
Do you think there'll ever be a Bond spin-off? Because so many franchises, well, I say so many, Star Wars is going for a series and loads of spin-off series. Lord of the Rings, right, is doing a kind of spin-off thing on TV styly things, but more episode based.
Yeah.
Do we think James Bond would ever suit that, or does it not really work?
I think you could argue for it, but again, I don't know how much they're still on Ian Fleming's original stuff. I feel like maybe they've sacked that all off now.
That's the weird thing, though, because I think Spectre was meant to be a bit of a throwback to that because it was Blofeld, right?
Yeah, it's like some of the old villains coming back together, yeah. All the rest, wasn't it? Spectre's the thing that's been around.
I'm excited for Rami Malek to be a villain.
I think he doesn't pick amazing projects. Recently, I think Rami Malek's... He did a film earlier this year with Denzel Washington that was apparently awful. Oh, and Jared Leto, a really big cast. I literally cannot remember the name of it, but he did really badly. And then, I don't know, and the trailer just looked like he was doing the same thing again, but in James Bond.
I feel like he is a little bit one-dimensional.
The guys who play the villains typically are quite, I just don't care. Javier Bardem was okay. Mads Mikkelsen was okay. Christoph Waltz's character was crap.
It's interesting noticing whether an actor is a bit one-dimensional or not, because a lot of the time when we have award season, you're kind of what does this actor really do that's specifically better than someone else? But Riz Ahmed, when we watched Sound of Metal, I notably was okay, this is a very different character to Four Lions or Nightcrawler, but they were all quite convincing. Whereas people like Rami Malek are kind of you're a bit of a moody, quiet, jokey, but supposedly quite compelling. I do like him, but that's kind of all he is. Whereas there are people who kind of elevate it a bit more, I feel.
Again, it's just one of those ones where I will go and see. It'll gross $1 billion and then we'll forget that it happened. I just think it's the fate of James Bond.
Another one on the list.
Yeah, the expectation is always going to be too high for I think it to really achieve anything anyway, given that it's already an established franchise and all the rest.
All right. One more film. We've got a few more, but I think we can leave a couple for next week, maybe.
What are you going to pick?
Jungle Cruise. I think this has like just recently come out, like all on my social media. Like I had no idea about this film or whatever, and I've just started getting adverts, trailers for it and whatever. Like, what even is it?
I fully do not care about this film.
I saw the front and just thought it was Jumanji. Like, again.
Yeah, isn't that the point? It doesn't it just look like the same thing?
Is that the point of it? I couldn't tell.
Is it the same actors?
Also, it's literally an uninspiring title. It sounds like a shit ride at Disneyland, doesn't it? Jungle Cruise. Oh, just who cares? And it's got Jack Whitehall, who has fallen off the face of the earth recently, by the way. I don't know where he's been. Oh, Jesse Plemons is in it. He's quite a good actor. Don't know, like, who's it for? Who's the target audience for this? Oh, it is a Disney film. Okay, right, good.
Do you want me to read the premise?
Oh, it's got Dwayne The Rock Johnson in it as well.
Set during the early 20th century, a riverboat captain named Frank takes a British scientist and her brother on a mission into the jungle to find the Tree of Life. All the while, the trio must fight against dangerous wild animals, a hot and deadly environment, and a competing German expedition that is determined to find the tree first.
So it's not King Kong, and it's not Journey to the Center of the Earth, but all the boring elements of those two films.
Sounds like a crap version of Lara Croft and The Cradle of Life.
Yeah, what a waste of time. Why is this being made?
It's got Emily Blunt in it, though. She's quite fit.
Yeah, but...
Thanks for bringing that, Will.
This is what annoys me as well.
Did you just say she's quite fit? Is that what you said?
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, grow up.
Like, budget, $200 million. Like...
Well, it's all for CGI.
Like, what kind of world...
Oh, and it's based on a ride. It's based on a ride at Disneyland.
It's literally what I said at the start of this. I said it sounds like a crap ride at Disneyland, and it actually is. Why would you make a film out of a ride? Can you imagine if...
They've done it before. There was something else they based the film off.
If Stealth gets a film, or if Colossus gets a film...
Sign me up, that's
if
one.
If Flying Fish gets a film...
Imagine if Saw got a film. That would
that would pop, to be fair. I'd give you that. Saw, the ride, the film. I would watch that.
And I think on that note, that's all we've got time for this week.
Okay, on to the mailbag. And not the most questions we ever got. Step it up, Stubbies, because we really need your interactions here. We got one good question, though. And that comes from loyal listener, George Mason. No free shout-outs. He said, what are your thoughts on the upcoming Lord of the Rings series? Now, I haven't seen that much about it except for a couple of stills, I think. Harry, I'm going to go to you as the font of our knowledge here.
Yeah. I mean, I think Amazon are spending more on it than they've spent on any other TV show, than has ever been spent on a TV show, which obviously isn't a sign that it's going to be good, but it might look all right. I don't know what the plot is. Is it a prequel? It's probably a fucking prequel.
It's got to be a prequel, I think, because it just seems too... It wraps up too nicely at the end of Return of the King.
Yeah, a 5-season production commitment worth at least $1 billion. I mean, that is mad. Who's in the
What's
cast?
It called? Do you know what it's called?
I think it's untitled, and I think it's just called Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Are there any big cast members as I look through? Not really. There's almost definitely faces I recognise, but not big names, which is a good thing.
It is
when these
prequel.
Series attach too many big faces, it means the substance doesn't add up, which is good. However, I don't particularly know any Amazon series that I rate, which worries me a little bit as well. Although this will be their flagship for years to come if they get it right. So I think they'll be concerned about that anyway. I'd say I look forward to it. Do I actually love the Lord of the Rings films? Not really. I think the world's kind of cool. I think the stories... I can't believe they won 11 Oscars or whatever the number is. Don't know. What do you reckon?
I'm a big fan of the universe. And I think there's potential there. And I feel like it hasn't been milked that much. Like, that is kind of a good thing and a bad thing. Because I think when you get to this point where it's like the last film was, what, 15 years ago? You're kind of like...
Do you include The Hobbit in this, is the thing?
Oh, it has been milked. But those were already books, so I guess that's...
And they were
okay.
Bad. They were bad books.
They were bad.
I think... Is this got no book-based origins?
Well, the thing is, The Silmarillion, I think, was a prequel to all of... Like, they could probably...
Yeah, It is based on a novel, it says.
Okay.
No. So, which novel is it based off?
And it's potentially coming out this year.
Oh, it's based on Lord of the Rings. I mean, the whole thing's set in the same universe, so, like, surely it can't be coming out this year if it's costing $1 billion to make.
No, it started in 2019. How have they done that quickly?
First episode date 2021.
Yeah, okay, that's mad. Fair enough. Maybe they just got it done.
The main character is being played by a guy called Robert Aramayo, who played Ned Stark as a young person in Game of Thrones.
And he's from Kingston upon Hull.
And he went to Juilliard in America.
Yes, he did, didn't he? And he's been in some good stuff. Well, he's been in one thing.
He was in Bugsy Malone in primary school. Do you know who else was in Bugsy Malone in primary school?
You.
Yes.
Oh, there we
go. I remember coming to watch.
Oh, no, he played Bugsy Malone.
Yeah, I wasn't at your performance.
I play Bugsy Malone. Anyway, I'm excited about this. I think I want to see what it's like, at least.
Yeah, it's one that I will definitely watch.
Will, please tell me you've seen all the Lord of the Rings.
Yes, you're not.
I've not seen any.
That's mad. We should watch the director's cut with you where they do like 40 minutes of a fireworks display and it's just rubbish.
You know what? I had a friend that had a PS3 like when they were brand new and he was really into Lord of the Rings. So I've played like the full video game walkthrough with him.
The video games were good fun.
But I've never actually seen
it. The video games were like peak couch co-op video games, the Lord of the Rings ones.
So yeah,
except for the new one, which is like
I thought it was quite good, the new ones.
Just a different type of game.
I don't care. This is a film podcast. And yeah. I won't have video game chat.
I mean, it's transmedia storytelling. We're talking about like a whole universe. So.
And if we were called Save the
Video Game Nub Control.
No, we'll move on. We'll move on from that attempt.
I was just going to say, like, to be fair, maybe like as someone that has never seen any of the films, the TV series, like the format might be a bit more accessible for me.
I think, right, yeah, let's create
our own question just out of that statement, because I think that works quite nice. Do you think that when we look at kind of the big franchises, you can come in having never seen older films, see a spin-off, and then go back and watch the old ones kind of in a good way, in a nice way, or is it kind of like less relevant because you're more attached to the newer ones?
It's very
dependent, I guess.
Yeah, so Blade Runner 2049 is the one that immediately came to my head, because I think you have to have seen or at least know the plot, the original one, for it to make sense, because much of it hinges on Harrison Ford. And yet I'd say you can watch the new Star Wars and none of that matters, because they are doing a separate, you know, it's a universe exclusive, isn't it? Or The Hobbit, you could have seen the original ones, but it doesn't matter because he's sort of his own character. I think it's very dependent. I think you are right, though, Will, that 100% this will be something that is way more accessible to you because you don't have to have watched 9 hours of The Ring going to Mordor.
Yeah, I think that's probably the main reason why I haven't seen the films, because it's just a bit too late for me now to commit like that amount of time to watch this series that I don't know if I'm going to enjoy. Whereas if I can watch like 2 episodes of this and say, oh, actually, like, I played the video games and I like this, it is probably worth me just sitting down to watch it because I know I'll enjoy it.
And that's,
I don't think I've ever met someone who's played the Lord of the Rings video games and not seen Lord of the Rings.
That's sort of the theme we've spoken about today, really, was these sort of sequels and prequels from existing universes. And I suppose it'd be interesting because, like, Game of Thrones has obviously got at least one new show coming out. I think it might be three, like miniseries or something. Are people going to be able to watch those having not watched the original Game of Thrones? Because if not, they haven't increased their viewership because no one new is going to watch them. Plus, the people who got alienated by the original show won't watch it either. So I'm like, are they actually going to flunk because they've set themselves, you know, if they're going to be all about Targaryens, are people going to give a shit because they've already seen that? Or is it going to be something completely new and they just use the name really as a brand for them to do something cool with it? I don't know. It's one of those ones where I'd be like, I think the way they play it is as important as the content they produce.
Yeah, I do agree with that. In terms of like, as well, getting people into, say, like older films within that series, or like the originals, I suppose is the right way to say it. I recently, like, so I grew up like watching the original Star Wars because my dad was like really into it. and we've obviously had a lot of films since those films came out. And I've recently like gone back to watch like episode 4, 5, and 6. And I don't know if this is really controversial, but like when you could like take in the whole universe and all the films that have been made since and like the production value and all that kind of stuff, like those three films are actually not particularly good films, like at all.
I think even more shocking is how bad the Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, and what's the third one called? Empire Strikes Back?
Empire's no. Five. No, it...
Rise of... the...
Return of the Jedi 6. What's something Sith. Revenge of the Sith.
Revenge of the Sith,
Revenge of the Sith. Yeah. Revenge of the Sith.
Those films look awful.
Well, they're more modern than the originals, aren't they?
Yeah, it, but I mean, at least you can argue like the original ones. Yeah, you can 80s. Argue they're 50 years old now, those films.
Yeah.
These films are only 20 and they look rubbish. They've got like PowerPoint transitions between scenes. You know, they'll do the...
Star Wipe.
I'm like, what are you doing? What are you doing? I've done this to present rubbish at school. And you've put that in your film, George.
So it's kind of like, it's all well and good having these kind of like new series to draw people into like... where the franchise started and like where it came from, but then like I say, like I loved watching the Star Wars films with my dad when I was growing up, but like I've gone back and I've been a bit like, how did I actually like, I just didn't know better obviously because these aren't actually that good.
You're growing up, mate.
Yeah. I feel like what a film was just quite different compared to now, just yeah. Because the universe, it's there as a kind of lore, as a kind of backstory that the really diehard fans can engage with in their own diehard way. Whereas nowadays, I think you still engage with it, but it's so much more accessible because you've got 20 spin-offs, games, merchandise. I mean, it's like it'll be featured in Fortnite for a week. So like, it just becomes so much easier to be like a bit more immersed in the universe. Yeah. Whereas beforehand, you watch this kind of raw, because that's what cinema was like back then, film, and then you kind of enjoyed all the extra tidbits you got from the like little bits of media you saw around it, but you didn't kind of have to throw yourself in, you had to throw yourself in, whereas nowadays it's kind of like you can kind of pick and choose.
Yeah,
well I think people are just too protective in particular of the Star Wars franchise now, like having looked back, like rewatched a lot of the films, it's like, were the most recent set of films actually that bad? Like,
weirdly, I think the Star Wars fans are far more critical of their own stuff than maybe your Marvel fans. Marvel fans will swallow anything they're fed.
Basically,
the Star Wars fans are actually like, these films are actually quite crap. It's weird. Yeah. Online opinion of maybe 3 or 4 people sways it so heavily. It's actually quite mad. That you could write, you know, if you're an influential enough person, you can write a review or say something you don't particularly like, and genuinely, you could get a lot of people to go with you. You know, those interviews of like Emilia Clarke, like grimacing when she thinks about the Game of Thrones finale, or I've forgotten her name, Daisy Ridley making weird faces at the Star Wars finales. You know, just little things like that. You're like, they know it's crap as well.
I feel like that ties, because like
ties in slightly to what I was saying. But I've just kind of realized the point I was maybe trying to make was that older franchises, like if they've got a lot of backstory and lore to them, that's probably because they were better. Like it's indicative that they had a big following and they had a bit more quality. Whereas nowadays you don't need that quality to have all of this stuff around a film.
Yeah.
Because it's just, it's required for the promotion of it, for the marketing of it. And it just guarantees them to make money.
Yeah. Sad.
Sad. Well, let's move on. As I said, the mailbag wasn't incredible. We got a nice, or maybe not nice, message from one of our followers. Do we name him? Do we out him?
No, you know who you are.
Yeah, you know who you are. You know, we appreciate your feedback and we appreciate that, you know, you want to get more content out of us. We love to hear it. And here it is. So hopefully you'll be pleased. Do you have anything to say to him, Will or Harry?
No, what you did is illegal in some countries, so do that again and I'll see you in court.
Okay, let's move on to the Film of the Week.
So this week we have watched a Netflix historical archaeology drama, and if that doesn't, you know, make the hairs on your neck stand up, I'm sorry, but there's nothing else for you. Called The Dig. It's got a couple of big names. Carey Mulligan, who almost won an Oscar this year. She's been in a couple of good films. Drive, for example. Ralph Fiennes, who you'll know as the bloke without a nose from Harry Potter. Lily James, who you'll know from not being a very good actress. Thoughts, lads, immediately. What do you see? What do you think?
I feel so sorry for the people who had to read the 2007 novel that this was based on.
Surely not. There's not a book.
Imagine having if this film was a book, I would be asleep. I mean, maybe I should
actually
read it to sleep.
I think the book, I'll just double take that. I think actually the book could be a bit more interesting than the film.
I'll be honest, I'm not as down on it as you two. I thought it started fine, but it felt like at about an hour in, they picked up a completely different storyline.
Yeah, they
like it went from three people, because that's what it was, three people in a field who like archaeology, which I could see sort of just being one of those slow burner pathos ones, to a closet love story.
Which came out of nowhere.
Random RAF bollocks that didn't have any bearing on the story. The illness that just seemed to get exacerbated for no reason. Like a competition between museums, the war, reputation. It was all just really, you know, oh, we're going 100 miles an hour. And then, I mean, we're not obviously not going 100 miles an hour, because we're talking about archaeology for boats. But do you know what I mean? Who paced this?
To me, it felt like they used all those tools because they basically realised that the film wasn't interesting enough.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Definitely. I'd love to see... This sounds like a very easy way to take a dig, no pun intended, at a film. Mm. But, like, I'd love to see a version of this film that was completely true to history. Like where none of like where all these things, if these things actually happened at the same time in the way they did, fair enough.
But it's like
I'm sure the people weren't as attractive as like the cast are of this film,
isn't it? Like, you know, two blokes touching hands whilst excavating a rock, and you're thinking that wasn't subtle, was it? You know, these gazing at each other from about half a yard away. Oh, don't look, my wife's looking. It's like, oh my god, give up. Do you know what I mean?
I would have liked this to be, yeah, like Rory says, like a fully accurate kind of like docu-film, basically.
And then I feel like it should have been like half an hour long.
Yeah, this film is an hour and 52 minutes.
Yeah, it was a slog getting through. I had to watch it on 2 days.
Yeah.
In terms of plot, like looking kind of just at the story, which we've already kind of talked about, who did you guys actually feel attached to or maybe invested in during this film? Because for me, it was one character who I was like cared at all what happened to them. And that was good old Basil Brown.
Yeah, it's Ralph Fiennes. It's the only one you care about.
Other than him, it got to the end and I was like, I don't care about any of these other people.
And to be fair, that was like the redeeming part of the film about me, because it was like, fair play, like this guy's story like probably needs to be told, like he needs some kind of recognition.
But I'd argue that the whole story builds up this story. There will be a spoiler here. Builds up the premise that he's going to be recognised for what he's done because he's taken the road less travelled. And then he gets ignored and she gets ignored and everyone dies. And I'm like, right, great. So there was no happy ending. You just quite like digging.
That was the thing. It was like unless it was just about him, the premise of the thing was that she was trying so hard to make sure he got the recognition he deserved. And then it gets to the end of the film and it's like,
yeah,
he wasn't actually acknowledged for 9 years. And then he was acknowledged. And it's like, right, so what happened in this film?
It just felt so disjointed and janky. And, you know, I thought there were some nice looking shots, but realistically, I think they could have done a lot more with what they did. They did some cheese RAF plane flying overhead CGI that just made me want to go to sleep. There was some really bait, you know, oh, she's coughing, she must be ill. Or, oh, she's taking
the illness thing bugged me. I'd have liked to kind of...
Yeah. It just felt like, oh, we've got to ram plot devices in, otherwise no one's going to watch this film. Do you know what? It feels like, were this an independent and not a Netflix, none of that would have been in there.
None of Netflix,
as in none of the like filler rubbish of these romances and illnesses and pitfalls and all the rest would be in there. I would have just been like, there's a film there.
Something that really bugged me was that there were a few moments where Mr. Brown, Basil Brown, kind of like showed his interest in excavating, or however he put it. And he was like, oh, you can pick me up any bit of Suffolk soil and I'll be able to tell you where it's from.
Yeah.
I feel like they threw those lines in to be like, Suffolk, lol, you know what I mean? there's people who like care about this stuff, lol, it's really interesting. But it's like, I would have preferred a film where they kind of fully went that way, engaged with it. And it's like, this is what these people are like. This is kind of why they find it so interesting. And let's hear from them and like see what they kind of sounded like. But instead, that was kind of sprinkled into some weird rom-com with like three different love stories that's like, I don't know. These aren't links.
When you think about what the film's about, like, there's two interesting parts of the story. It's like the person that it's about or like the objects that he finds. Well, it's a bloody tough ask to make inanimate objects like in the ground, kind of like the whole premise for a film, unless you basically tell a documentary style story about like where they came from, which is a direction they could have taken the film. It would have been like dramatically different, I appreciate, from what we've got. Or it's kind of like a character development of Basil, basically. Like for me, that's the two options that make this film successful. And like they didn't pick either of them. And then like you've already discussed, we just get kind of weird, kind of like a bit cliched kind of plot filler bits that to fill out the film for almost 2 hours.
What's weird as well interesting is that the romance angle is by two characters who aren't in the first hour of the film. So you have no emotional attachment to them whatsoever. And yet then the writer wants you to be sympathetic to almost both of them at the point. And I'm thinking, I could not care less.
Especially when you've had no exposition to their character.
That's what I mean. Like, yeah, there's no explanation. I mean, I thought at one point they were trying to build a romance between the main two characters before I saw his wife rock up. Yeah. And I was like, oh, but she's looking at him longingly out the window. She wants to have dinner with him. But then he's with his wife. But then that's not actually part of the plot. And I'm like, make up your mind. Who
but even then, to sleep with who? It's kind of like then they make out the wife like they're not particularly in a happy, like it's not.
Like she knows that he's more attached to his work than he is to her.
Yeah, like she's not romantic towards him, or there's no affection. It's kind of like.
But that's literally the deepest that any of the kind of emotional relationship analysis of this film goes. Like, I found, as you said, we get no idea of the Peggy and Stuart who come in as the kind of couple towards the end. And honestly, as soon as they came in, I basically stopped paying attention to the film because it was like, I'm not going to watch another hour of supposedly understanding these people. And, you know, if Basil comes back, I'll watch that because he was quite a cool character. But other than that,
yeah, it just became so vapid. And it feels like every little nuance that probably the book explained got made into a drama point. Like him getting stuck underneath the dirt at the start feels like at one point in the book, I bet they've mentioned it in like a paragraph. They're like, oh, we can blend that out into a plot point, can't we?
That was the most dramatic part of the film. I was watching it, and up until that point, I was like, okay, so there's going to be zero action in this film. And then it happened, and I was like, oh, okay, this can go somewhere. It was
quite a good shock. Like, wasn't really expecting that.
I think it was acted quite well. What did you guys make overall of the acting, of that scene and of the whole film? Do you think they were convincing in their portrayal?
I think they were fine. I sort of have a bugbear for these period dramas. I just hate the way that they're forced to whack on these accents that they just snap me out. I know they're supposed to be authentic, but they just do not do anything for me. You know, especially when you've got, you know, Ray Fiennes doing the most working class accent he possibly can, whilst Carrie Mulligan pretends to be like a proper baroness and things. I just, oh, you know, oh, the Eton boys, we've got to make them sound as posh as we can. It just stinks of just, I mean, I don't know what I expect them to do differently, but it just, those sort of things bore me. I think he's acted fine, but no one's going to be like, wow, what a performance from A, B, or C.
Yeah, the thing is, it is like, it's a historic film based on true events. It's kind of like an Imitation Game or like The Theory of Everything. Like, they all come under the same kind of umbrella, I think, where they're kind of loosely based on things that happen in real life. So it kind of is a documentary style film, but then it's kind of been dramatized for theatre and TV and audiences. So it's kind of like a weird middle ground where I don't think you can ever get like outstanding acting in it almost. Do you know what I'm trying to say? Because it's just like they're representing kind of people that did really exist, and these films aren't made for kind of outstanding acting performances.
I feel like that kind of goes alongside the editing of the film as well, because for me the whole time it looks so modern, like it looks too good to be representing that time period, and then that kind of that would kill your immersion in the film unless it's consistent throughout, and it is quite good at being consistent throughout with that. You kind of feel like, wow, like this looks quite cool. A lot of the scenes have quite a nice aesthetic to them. But then I found that the acting of Lily James as Peggy, there were moments where, I don't know if it was the writing or if it was her delivery of the lines, but she kind of slipped back into the 21st century. And I was kind of like, would someone have actually said that in the 30s, like during the war? Mm. And that kind of, it's stuff like that that just clicks something in me where I'm like, I'm watching a Netflix film that's had too much money put into it.
Or like they do the blatant like patriarchal stuff. Like, oh, Lily James only actually been brought along because she's light. And that, you know, the woman is subservient to the man. I'm like, we get it. You don't have to be so on the nose about it every single scene. With a woman looking disheartened because she's been told something that really you wouldn't be told nowadays. It's just like, what's the point? Also, the love interest for Lily James, he didn't exist in real life. So that's completely fictional. Doesn't exist. Yeah, so that is, a love triangle for the sake of it in a film that describes itself as an archaeologist embarking on a historically important excavation of Sutton Hoo.
Interestingly,
who was it for?
This was filmed on the A3.
Yeah, the band that plays in it is a Farnham-based band.
Wow.
It is a Surrey production through and through.
Surrey.
Sutton Hoo is quite close, obviously.
What do we think? Are we in a point to wrap up our thoughts on this film?
Yeah, it's just one that I will just forget instantly, is the thing.
Do you dare give it a number, Harry?
Oh, I might have to think. Someone else go. I'm going to have to think about this.
Go on, Will.
Yeah, I agree with Harry. I think the perfect way to describe this film is like one that your parents would definitely put on that you would never remember you watched immediately after finishing it. In terms of a rating, it's hard because like I like that it's, at the end of the day, it is about this guy that deserved more recognition for something he did than he actually got. But as a film, it's like 5.2.
That's fairly close to what I was going to say. I think you summed it up quite well earlier on when you said that it's just a story that you feel kind of needed to be told for that specific person.
Yeah.
Because he kind of deserved the recognition, as you just said. And I think that was the redeeming quality for me in this film, kind of alongside Ralph Fiennes' acting, which held things together. I would give it a 4.9. I think it falls below, like it's not what I'm going to remember. It's not particularly good. And it stands up as like I didn't hate that I had to watch it, but I wouldn't watch it again.
Yeah, I think I'm in a pretty similar mindset, to be honest. I would say it's a mid-4, isn't it? I just think there's no real merit. I think it looks okay. I think it's got some decent clothes for the time.
You think stories like this need to be dramatized? What are the benefits of this kind of story being turned into a like dramatic film?
I thought this was the perfect thing for a crap BBC period drama that I'd never watch. It reeks of that. You know, you make 5 episodes, each an hour long. You put the love triangle in the middle 3 and the excavating in the first and the last and a bit in between.
There we go.
I can't believe they didn't do that.
Hire him. BBC, get on Harry Osborne.
I agree, but it does raise an interesting question. Like, are people interested in, like, these stories if they're not just massively over dramatized these days? Like, is it like do this or basically nobody actually finds out about this guy and like the work he did? I don't know.
Get rid of it.
I gotta say, this is the worst film I've seen in probably 6 months. I'd say it.
And you've seen at least 3 films in that time.
Yeah. I mean, not a big film watcher, am I? But even so.
Mate, you probably need to stop saying that. You were literally doing a film podcast on a regular basis.
Honesty is the best policy.
Brother, no, it's not. We're doing a podcast.
Yeah, actually, in fact, possibly the worst film that I've watched on the podcast.
Yeah, I think that's not... I don't think that's an unfair thing to say. I'm trying to think what else we've watched that was crap. Have we watched any that we really didn't like?
Not that I can think of. I didn't find One Night in Miami incredible.
No, neither. But I think I at least feel like that was a better topic to be told, even if it was slightly fictionalized. I think that holds more merit.
Mm.
Similar kind of film in some ways, isn't it, to this, actually? Like, slightly dramatized version of real-life events. But it explored characters a lot more and, like, personalities rather than just using weird...
We've watched The Mauritanian, fine. Man on Fire, fine.
I still don't understand why we watched Man on Fire, but, you know.
No, neither do I. I think it was on my film list tonight. I was like, oh, we need to watch this stuff. And we did, and it was really, really, really average.
I think the first half hour was pretty, really good stuff, to be honest. So I'm kind of glad I watched it.
All right, mate, if you say so.
Anyway, I think that wraps us up for
that was our film of the week. Please send in any suggestions you've got for other films you want us to watch, because a lot of stuff's coming out soon, but we wouldn't mind hearing what you'd like us to talk about. Brilliant. Well, sorry, that sounded really sarcastic. No, that's fine.
Just continue.
Good. No, we're happy. That was this week's edition. I say this week, it's like this month, isn't it? Of Save the Stub. Thank you to my compadres again, Rory and Will, for joining me. We haven't decided on a film for next week, I'll be honest, or next time, because we're a bit lazy. But
I don't know, I'm confident. I think the ball's rolling. You know, the stubbies are engaged again.
We've said there's a lot of new films coming out soon, so it might be good to give this one over to the Stubmeisters.
I mean, like Optimus Prime said at the end of the first Transformers film, we are here and we are waiting. So send in those film reviews. No, don't send in any film reviews. Send in films. We'll do the reviews. If you send in the film reviews, we've got a fucking job. Stay safe and keep stubbing. Save the stuff.